Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Tuesday night, January 10th, 2023. My name is Jake Luke, and I'm joined on my screen by Spencer Nathaniel Schultz. How is it going, pal?
Going quite well. The Ravens net Roquan Smith to the largest linebacker deal in history. Setting the market, giving him an unprecedented $60 million fully guaranteed over 5 years, $100 million value. And man, just I have so many thoughts. It was such an interesting time for this extension to take place, but something that felt so inevitable from the exact moment that they traded for him on, I believe, Halloween Day. It was either Halloween Day or on, I think it was Halloween Day, the 31st. The deadline was on the 1st. So just felt inevitable. The amount of capital they gave up was the most they've ever really given up for a player in the John Harbaugh era. And to go get that guy that they had talked about so highly and sprinkled in. And I think that this deal and the trade that they made for him and everything surrounding it just really speaks to how set in their path they are and how confident they are in themselves and their blueprint and their plans and their philosophies. And Roquan Smith, the player, the person, so intriguing. I was laughing to myself. The intro was playing as we were getting going here. Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? And now that I've just seen little snippets of Roquan Smith interacting, I didn't really know much about him as a person or what his like personality was like or anything. And I just feel like we love that clip because it's so funny and so John and so unrelatable as like a, you know, 23, 25 year old player. But I feel like Roquan Smith would love to hear that. And I feel like him and John get it, could get into like, I don't know. I was just going down this, I guess, fan fiction in my mind that like he is such a John guy. And John is such a Roquan Smith guy. And I feel like their personalities are one and the same and they probably connect. And I think he just connects with Eric very much in that same sense then and everyone else in the building. So the player itself, you know, we've talked about him quite a bit. I don't think there are really any Ravens fans that haven't seen the impact that he makes on this field. I think that it's a pretty clear-cut consensus in ways, which felt like maybe when the trade went down wouldn't be the case. And there's always going to be the Vaz of the Vazes of the world. And he's going to, you know, hate paying a linebacker or whatever. We love you, Vaz. But his impact has been so clear. And again, I think it just shows how, I can't think of the right words, persistent, prescient, like the Ravens just don't deviate from their path. They're so set. They talk about certain players over time. You know, Marcus Peters, they had spoken of highly over time. Yannick Ngakoue, they were linked to so many times. They just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. You know, watch them go get Xavien Howard.
I was literally just going to say that.
Watch Xavien Howard, who had a down year, be able to go from being kind of top dog this year, Byron Jones is hurt, and, you know, has that contract. Watch the Dolphins part with him and him end up in Baltimore or something. DeAndre Hopkins on the trade block, which we'll get into. They sniffed around him. If the Cardinals hadn't offered a second, DeAndre Hopkins would have been a Raven. So I think that they are just so certain of themselves, and I think this deal says that thoroughly. And regardless of whatever's happening, like, they have their certain players that they like and their certain qualities that they like, and it doesn't matter what, like, there's no variables involved in it. It feels like there's no outside change that could make them go, oh, we're not going to go trade for Roquan Smith and pay him if the opportunity presents itself. So I don't know. I think it's kind of calming in a way as a fan. And I think it was really exciting. I think it's a huge day. And now what the Ravens core looks like of, you know, Marcus Williams, Marlon Humphrey, Roquan Smith, and I'll throw Kyle Hamilton in there on defense, who had such a good performance on Sunday. And then looking offensively, you know, you've got Andrews and Stanley. And I don't want to get right into Lamar Jackson talk, but it's like they clearly set aside money for Lamar Jackson. The plan to me so clearly says Lamar Jackson. They have the quarterback that has beat Mahomes and, you know, beat Josh Allen and, you know, has gone and done it and has looked so good and won so many games and wins. And I feel like, you know, they stick to their plans. They stick to their guns. And I don't know when the last time I can really think of them deviating was. I guess like when they drafted Lamar maybe. But other than that, it's just, I don't know. It was a really, really cool kind of universe expanding, thought expanding situation in them extending Roquan Smith to me.
Yeah, he's one of their guys, to your point that you made there. They talked about him before that 2018 draft. They have talked about him since then, which I always find really interesting when they kind of go outside of the walls of the castle, because like this kind of stuff, they're always so guarded, and you know, it's just like you kind of want to play your cards close to the vest a little bit, but he's one of the guys that they have sort of let slip their admiration for. And Zeribek kind of put it out there before the deadline, go get Roquan Smith as like the option that he thought would be the most optimal. And I think, you know, he's got connections inside that building. I think he knew how much they wanted him. They go and do it, second and a fifth round pick. I was fine with that at the time. I really wanted them to sign him to really kind of consummate things. And here we are. They've done it. $20 million. It's not that much more than a Shaq Leonard or a Fred Warner are making in Indy and in San Francisco, respectively. And you know, our friends over in the Primo Positions cabal, I think they can get a little crazy with this stuff sometimes, but you know, I can understand a little bit of trepidation about positional value and stuff like that. But I think, and particularly not really with running back as much, but I think with a linebacker like this of this caliber, when you talk about the elite tier, I think some of that stuff goes out the window because you talk about it not being a position that impacts the passing game necessarily. And sure, that's like maybe true in like a one-to-one sense of the word, but you look at the way that he fills gaps, you look at the way that he shoots gaps, that he is a absolute force multiplier in the run game. So if you get into a first down situation where you try to run on first and 10 and he just stones a guy and creates a second down and 12, well, that puts you into a pretty one-dimensional must-pass scenario. And then you have him, you know, getting an interception against the Steelers. Well, that affects the pass. And I guess not to like cherry pick and, you know, get anecdotal on it, it just feels like that he is an explosive playmaker on the defensive side of the ball, and he facilitates explosive plays to happen around him, and he brings the attitude and he brings the character and every single thing that you want in a Baltimore Raven. So like I said, I can understand maybe a little bit of looking ahead to the future and thinking, okay, well, is this great for their prospects to sign a wide receiver in free agency? Probably not. But it was going to be tough to begin with because we always say like, oh, well, you can get this wide receiver at a discount or this guy at X discount. They all get paid. It's insane. It's a bubble. It's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And I don't know when it's going to burst. It actually kind of weirdly did in 2020. But then you had the Christian Kirk deal actually looking like a good deal kind of a little bit, which is funny. But it's just one of those things where that was always going to be tough. But it's like you have a guy like this, get him into the building, and he turns out to be everything you thought he would be and potentially more. Totally okay with locking him up long-term and making him the face of your defense that has now been completely built up through the spine. Another thing that you talk about a lot with Travis Jones and with some of the guys that you have up front with him, Patrick Queen's going to be there for at least the short term. Kyle Hamilton's going to be there for the long-term at safety. And then, you know, you talk about maybe a potential weakness at cornerback going into this offseason, but you got an all-pro there already in Marlon Humphrey, and you're going to have a chance to solidify yourself there. I wonder what's going to happen with his name's escaping me. Fuller there. I'd like to see him potentially stick around. I'd love to see Peter stick around. We'll see what happens, but it just feels like they've got their guys. They've got a core that they can build around. And yeah, man, it's disappointing, the wide receiver thing, but we can talk about that until we're blue in the face. We're going to continue to talk about that until we're blue in the face. Same thing with the Lamar Jackson contract, which there's some trepidation on that end of like, why hasn't that gotten done? And it's like, well, we do have to remember that he set a deadline and he said he wasn't going to talk about it during the season. I know the injury has made that discussion a little bit weird for some people, but it's just kind of where we're at. And you got to take your wins and celebrate your wins where you get them. Your team got better today for the long term with a really, really good player as the beating heart in the middle of it. And very happy to see this happen with Roquan Smith.
Definitely. And you bring up some interesting topics there to unpack. And it's just that relative, and there's an interesting thread just going on right before we hopped on. Gordon McGinnis and Daniel Rees, two of our good buddies, talking through some fun stuff. And Dan had a comment that I really liked. And in the conversation of devalued positions or positional value, however you want to phrase it, Dan, who definitely, you know, whatever, Dan basically goes, I watch more and more linebacker and running back with this conversation in mind. And I think the devalued discussion doesn't really apply to the elite tier of players. The difference between a good linebacker and an average is maybe minimal, but elite players garden a different discussion. And then Gordon of PFF goes, you know, I agree with this to a point. My opinion on second round running backs, for example, has changed a lot over the last 18 months or so, but I probably wouldn't want to spend a lot on a contract wise for one necessarily. And my reply to that was that, you know, football in general has changed a lot in the last 18 months, and that what we thought, or what so many people thought, and I'm going to toot my own horn because I didn't ever think this, but what so many people thought was that what we saw in 2020 and 2021 was going to be football for a very long period of time uninterrupted, that defenses in general were devalued, that spending defensively is devalued, that, you know, explosive long plays and this pass happy league and the efficiency of passing the football and wide receiver value and all of those things, that just was the way that it was going to be for ever, maybe. Like, there was no thought of change or anything like that. And it's just like another interesting thing that ties in. Brandon Thorne today was looking at the all-time single season receivers by yards. And obviously, Justin Jefferson gets super close. Cooper Kupp, you know, Calvin Johnson wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. But then Brandon Thorne goes, wow, look at the 1995 season. And there's like seven guys from one season in the top like 30 single season receiver performances of all time. And it just goes back to the cyclical nature of the sport, which is what makes it a complex sport. It's what makes it complex. You know, it's this violent sport. It's the gladiator. It's, you know, guys getting concussions, idiots ramming their heads into each other and all of those things. But the grand chess that goes into this shit is beyond any other sport in my mind. And the nature of having plays that are set and end and then going back and having an entire other sport be played between, you know, a heavy personnel run play into a light personnel pass play. Those are two different entities, unlike any other sport puts forth. And what I'm trying to get at is that football is always cyclical. The offense will make the adjustment. The offense will gain a rules advantage. You know, DPI is called more, or there's less contact allowed, or the, you know, a foot is allowed in bounds, or something's allowed, or a catch is whatever. Usually the rules grow towards the offense, but defenses get paid for a reason. Defenses adjust over time. Like, there's always this gotcha moment where offenses come flying out with something. And the last couple of years, it's been the RPO spread game and some of the play action stuff and putting, you know, linebackers in conflict specifically and all of those kinds of things. And then again, we were talking about this kind of Bengals preview and this Bengals game. It's like, the Ravens are the epitome of adjusting to offenses. They went from a middle of the field closed, not dominant, but, you know, they visioned Earl Thomas. They wanted Earl Thomas, middle of the field closed, stack the box. You can't fucking run on us. We have Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, and Earl Thomas. You have to try to throw at them down the sideline. that shifted. They didn't like that idea relative to what football had become. They get rid of Wink Martindale. They bring in Mike McDonald. They pay safeties. They are playing so much more too high and doing so much more with the safeties being interchangeable as opposed to more of the slot box safety in Chuck Clark and then an Earl Thomas as opposed. Marcus Williams is coming up and playing man. Like, people don't realize how often he is playing in the slot, playing in man, or changing post-snap. He is not just getting stuck on the roof all the time. So what that produces is that you mentioned, to kind of, I guess, put a zipper on this, is that you say, okay, well, the cornerback situation has to be figured out. You also made a great point of that linebacker can help coverage in ways. And when you have the capacity to say, we can park the car on top with too high safety structure and these kinds of coverages and have Marlon Humphrey, then it takes pressure off of that corner, but it's going to put a little more pressure on the middle of the field. So you need a really good middle of the field hook player that is smart and explosive, can diagnose route concepts, can go make plays on the football. And lo and behold, the most simple thing that people will always overlook in this sport, someone has to end fucking plays. Someone has to make the tackle. And if you're a guy like Roquan Smith, the way he tackles Joe Mixon like this past Sunday, the way he is dragging you to the ground and making your knees touch the ground on first impact, that is not something like that, or that is something that gets taken advantage of, or I guess not viewed as like a redeeming quality. But to be such an effective tackler, to recognize things first, be as athletic as he is and get there first, and then go end the play quickly, saving first down, saving yards. When you have someone that's doing that 80 times a season, making that kind of tackle, that adds the fuck up to a game full of yards. Like, that adds up to hundreds of yards being saved over the course of a season, first downs being saved, a dozen first downs being saved. So in the modern idea of football and the response to what offenses have become and the RPO and all of those kinds of things and the way teams are using safeties, it makes a guy like Roquan Smith more valuable than so many other players, than more valuable than potentially a cornerback too for the Ravens or all of these other things. So with that being said, I think, you know, he is just a perfect piece and they paid him like one.
Yeah, no, it certainly all are good points that you make there. And yeah, that weirdly reminds me of a Billick quote about going and getting Elvis Gare back, funny enough. It's like, he, you know, he'll give us those three extra completions a game that Trent didn't give us. And that adds up to like 50 extra completions a year. That's more completion percentage. That's more efficiency. Obviously that didn't work out like that, but it kind of, it feels like that a little bit with the Queen to Roquan thing, where I think Queen, obviously, I think he had played better than he was given credit for even before Roquan showed up, but I think it's just that little bit extra oomph in the tackling game, little bit extra recognition. And yeah, man, it's just like the absolute ability to just eliminate runs in their tracks. I mean, we can't take tackling for granted with this defense. Even this year, you have guys doing that weird like spear tackling method where they're like throwing their shoulder and just flying by these guys with the ball in their hands who just, you know, run for an easy first down. That happens still a good bit with this defense, not as much as it did in 2021 when we definitely couldn't take tackling for granted. And that just felt like an identity-less, just kind of blasé defense. Like, yes, Ja'Marr Chase, run by me and, you know, run through me and go score a touchdown. And like, yes, Nick Chubb, just fucking give me the business down here on the goal line. Like, that's, it's not happening with Roquan around. I mean, it happened a little bit in the Steelers game, but you're going to have some off nights. And I think there is something to be said for the fact that defense, it's just harder to be consistently dominant in today's game. But I don't know. I think if you have a guy like that, you're more often than not, you're going to be on the winning end of those types of plays. And I think having him there and having him settle things down for a defense that I think really could use it after the last couple of years. They've had some traumatic experiences. I think he's kind of helped to really sort of, you know, settle the tides down a little bit, you know, say you bring a certain gravitational pull to the defense that really, really needed it. And yeah, for that reason and for, you know, all the personal stuff too. They love who he is as a guy. He's already helping out in charities and things of that nature. He's just, he's the one, man. He's Kyle Hamilton is the kid. He's the man.
Definitely. And we hear Calais Campbell say that there's just been like an unbelievable amount of times over such a short period of time where Roquan Smith is calling stuff out pre-snap and you can watch it on tape and watch his immediate responses because he's doing the intense mental gymnastics and arithmetic required to be like, okay, here's the personnel I'm getting. Here's the formation I'm getting. That leaves these two possibilities. That makes the quickest way for me to understand which of the three plays it could be to, I don't know, look at the way that the tackle is set or look at the guard's first step or look at, you know, the quarterback's first step and then be able to seamlessly go execute in that sense. So it's putting an intelligent player and someone who is the only other linebacker besides Ray Lewis in NFL history to go for 100 plus tackles, two sacks and a pick in each of his first 5 years. He's one of five players ever over his first 5 years to go for 600 plus tackles, eight interceptions, and I think 16 sacks. And not to even disregard what he does as a pass rusher. Like, he is a good pass rusher. He is a threat as a pass rusher. All of those things. So, we can talk about him till we're blue in the face. I think we covered him pretty well, but it's just that I feel like, again, I do think and bringing it in and talking about the grand scale of Lamar Jackson. I know you said that you kind of like had a coworker at one point that was like, oh, well, you know, prepare for a weird negotiation. He doesn't have an agent.
It was my boss, actually.
Your boss that, you know, says he's a Bears fan. And he's like, oh, well, prepare for a weird negotiation. He doesn't have an agent, all of those things. But I just don't, there's no Roquan Smith to Lamar Jackson. Like, that's the thing. They view these things to me.
Yeah, I saw some people like saying that kind of stuff today. Like, oh, well, no, we can't use that as an excuse that Lamar doesn't have an agent for why the contract hasn't happened. For one, guys, Lamar shut the negotiations down. We've talked about this. He said, I'm not doing that. It was very well publicized. We could go back. He said, I'm not negotiating during the year. Two, you kind of can because there's no agent involved. This is, you can't predict what these guys are going to do when they're not working with one. Like Roquan Smith, Lamar Jackson, two different guys last time I checked. So they could have different priorities or whatever it might be. And I think that, you know, it's still very volatile. Like, and it's to the other conversation, like, yeah, shout out to my guy, Brian, who said that thing. He might have been a little brainwashed because that Chase Claypool thing not looking great right now. And our guy, Dave Klug on Twitter, I think, who is a Bears fan, was like, it's the greatest trick that Ryan Poles ever pulled, was like convincing themselves that getting rid of like a really good player was like somehow a good thing. And I don't know, like, you know, for the Bears, like, I was fine with it. Like, they weren't going to get that much out of him, at least in the capacity of wanting to continue to build around field. So I get why they did that. Flipping it for Chase Claypool probably doesn't look great in hindsight, especially if they have to sign Chase Claypool now. So, I mean, this doesn't have to be a Bears podcast, but that's just kind of like, there's a lot of interesting wrinkles to this situation.
Definitely. And the relativity of the receiver market, it's like you add an elite player at a position that is not viewed as valuable versus the same price to acquire a not even very good player, or maybe not even like a good player at a premium position. So I think it's somewhat of an overcorrection that has occurred in that sense. But Lamar Jackson in this sense, like, this is the kind of question I have. Like, the Ravens, I think, still view themselves. They did at one point have a super explosive offense. They were putting up a ton of points. They're a good scoring offense, but I feel like they are just always going to boil back to the idea of, we want to hold you under 20 and we want to score to 20 comfortably. And like, that is their recipe. They want to limit the possessions. So when you get into the wide receiver talk, it's like, again, what has their plan been? I'm not saying I support this. And I'm also saying they've been unsuccessful in the grand scheme of things. They were like, it's a second and a fifth for Chase Claypool. $27 million for an elite player. Go ahead.
Yeah, most of the last year plus, like, they haven't been able to score 20 consistently. So it's like, that's, and obviously Lamar hasn't been a part of a lot of those games, but like, that's kind of what you're putting yourself at risk to. So I'm totally with this move. I totally get it. And like, you can continue your point, obviously, but evolutions do still need to be made. Like, the primo positions, people that are all over this move, like, you know, some points are valid, I think.
For sure. But what I'm getting at is, like, they have told us, we are going to try to draft wide receivers. We are not going to try to pay them. That is going to be where they think that is where they find the biggest market inefficiency is, maybe quarterback. It's clearly to them not cornerback. They have paid the shit off of cornerbacks. At edge rusher, they have not invested any major assets. It feels like there's the cover versus rush. They take the cover aspect of that. So am I saying these things are good? Am I saying that they have worked? No, they have not gotten the requisite production at receiver, but I just, you know, the same kind of news today, DeAndre Hopkins, the Cardinals are going to try and part ways. Kyler Murray out for, you know, who knows how long at this point. They are without Cliff Kingsbury now. They fire Cliff Kingsbury. They're done with Steve Keim. They are in a maximum capacity retool or probably a rebuild with a quarterback that is rehabbing his knee. Next year is probably a rebuild year in a way, a mini rebuild or something of the sort. So with that being said, everyone's like, well, trade for Hopkins. I do think if the Ravens were to lock up Lamar Jackson for the long term, they might be willing to make the move for the receiver for a 3-year period.
Hopkins also has a no trade clause, so he can pick where he wants to go, even, you know, even with the trade. So
definitely. And wants a contract extension. And there's other guys like Mike Evans, you know, who knows what happens with the Bucs. The Bucs could very easily be ripped from head to toe following this season if Tom Brady's, you know, done. When Brady's done, it feels like that is the worst team in the NFL, them and the Rams, maybe for 5 years. The Rams probably have a little bit more there if McVay leaves. But anyway, I don't know. It just feels like weird spot. But if they do sign Lamar Jackson, then it's the 20s. Like, they view him as good enough to get 20, and they view what they have on defense as enough to hold you under 20. And I think that's how they – that's their – like we talk about, they talk about wanting to make the playoffs. I think that is their boiled down recipe. And to be honest, and you mentioned, you know, they haven't been able to hit the 20s, especially this last month or plus, and last year without Lamar Jackson. It's feasibly, can't, like their offense feasibly, this sounds like funny, I guess, but can't be worse than those two periods of time. Like that is the worst offense you can possibly conjure, is no running backs and no offensive line with a backup quarterback last year. Then no wide receivers and, you know, running backs coming back off of injury and, you know, a pretty damn solid offensive line. Like that is the worst that you're going to get. So it feels like it's only upside. If you sign Lamar Jackson, it's only better. Like it literally can't get worse personnel wise than some of the shit that they have trotted out in December in 2021 and 2022. So I feel like the plan is the plan, and I think we're seeing very much so them kind of lay out their marbles. They're going to have a first-round pick. It feels like that has a high likelihood of getting traded back. I don't think they would ever trade up, and you know they'll keep adding those first-round picks, and I'm curious to see. You know, at this point, it feels like Jackson, I don't know, it just to me would be quite a paradigm shift for a team that doesn't have those and is so tried and true in their way to not sign Lamar Jackson at this point and not continue that formula and think that they can do better off of it. Like if they just had J.K. Dobbins healthy over the last 2 years, their offense is probably so much fucking better.
Like, yeah. And
speaking of devalued positions.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like I'm totally with some of this stuff. Like I don't want a running back in the first round. You can miss me with that. Like, you know, and to the linebacker conversation, a guy that's like not in Roquan's tier, I'm good on that too. You can take that away, but I'm good on paying a Roquan and J.K. Dobbins. I think this year playing on one leg is showing us that running backs kind of do matter to an extent. So there's, you know, there is middle ground to be found in all of this. And yeah, I guess going back to the overarching point, it's like that's the last thing left to do here. Sign Lamar Jackson to the contract, free some cap space up, and then go do what you got to do to right the wrongs of, you know, the last, I guess you could say 2 years when you didn't do enough on the offensive line, and then maybe you overcorrected a little bit and you didn't do enough at wide receiver. And I think, you know, they maybe had plans too, but things just fall a certain way. You're not able to fully, you know, build a roster out to 100% perfection. And, you know, they just got caught flat footed in certain areas. So go ahead and sign him long term. See if you can get Hopkins, you know, make that work. Other teams seem to have no problem doing this to some extent, maybe to their long term detriment. But I don't know. I think it's time to sign him long term. Stop all this nonsense and let's just move forward into a new era.
Agreed. And I just think that again, they don't flip the sail. You know, they chart the course and they stick to it. And it's evident that they made Lamar Jackson a very substantial offer quite some time ago. It sounds like they upped that offer once and the feet are going to be held to the fire. They're going to have from, I believe the franchise tag date is March, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it's February. Let's see here. I'm going to try and find it. February 21st to March 7th. You have a window until 3:59 p.m. on March the 13th to execute the franchise tag. So that doesn't mean that they can't negotiate before that, but their feet are going to be the fire from that time in February, early March, until the deadline of where you can negotiate a new contract, which is usually, I think, like July 13th or 16th, somewhere right around there, where once you get to that point, you can't negotiate a new contract with a player on a franchise tag anymore. You're not allowed to sign them to an extension. So that period of time is going to be explosive, especially prior to the draft. And I don't know. I think they'd get it done. And again, I think the vision of this team, the injuries that they've had, and the kind of shit that they've trotted out, like, it literally can't get any worse than what we have witnessed over the last month and parts of last year in the final month. So at this point, I think the vision is clear, and it's, you know, laid down in front of us. Those core players, Stanley, Andrews, Humphrey, Williams, Smith, and I think Lamar Jackson is a part of that. I just don't know how you can look at the AFC of Herbert and Mahomes and Allen and all these other quarterbacks, Burrow in your own division, Watson in your own division, who's been so good, and we'll see what happens next year, and not like having one in the hand in that sense is worth how many in the bush? 1,000 in the bush. The Ravens suck as a quarterback evaluate. Like, they've had, they're a quarterback factory, but they also, like,
they've gotten a little
almost
lucky.
Fucking missed on Joe Flacco. Like, let's be clear here. He was pretty scary year one, year two.
Yeah. And they tried to, they wanted Leftwich and they got Bowler. They wanted Matt Ryan and they wound up with Flacco. And, you know, I think they wanted Baker Mayfield and they got Lamar Jackson. So, you know, I think, you know, those two of those things worked out for them pretty well, which is, you know, kind of an interesting way of looking at it. But yeah, I don't know. Don't let him get out the door. And we've been talking a little bit of Sopranos. It's time for a fucking meeting of the five families here. I want Lamar Jackson in Jupiter, Florida. I want Steve Bisciotti there. I want Ozzie Newsome there. I want Eric DaCosta there. I want John Harbaugh there. I want them to sit down and fucking figure this thing out. It's time.
It definitely is. Just get it done. And, you know, at this point, who knows? I guess we'll see tomorrow whether the fate of the future is for the near future is intact or not. It's going to be whether he's practicing or not is going to send the world into a tizzy one way or the other. But with all of those things in mind, I think that what Roquan Smith was doing to the Bengals and them signing him this week is so funny. And
that's almost like a deliberate troll job. And
right. It is. And for those of you who maybe didn't quite see, like, the Bengals were all complaining about like late shit. What I've ended up seeing on tape and what I've ended up like seeing from other people bring some things. One of the Ravens, I think WBAL reporters or Press Box Online reporters, maybe it was Bull Smoke, one of those guys, like, showed like Eli Apple like pulling guys' legs out of piles. Well,
yeah, that was Bo. Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of weird stuff like that. Roquan Smith chest bumps Jamar Chase. Number one, chest bumps Jamar Chase. Number two, throws the ball at him after a play where Tyler Boyd is laying on the ground, flips the ball at him.
That's just sick. Then, I mean, you gotta love that.
And then number three, after Worley, I'm always going to mess his name up. It's Daryl Worley, and I always want to say Robert Worley. Daryl Worley hits T. Higgins, kind of knocks him out of the game a little bit for a second, and Worley is laying on the ground, and Higgins is laying on the ground. Worley is in pain, like, a little bit, and Smith just runs up and starts shaking him and being like, yeah, yeah.
I think Higgins is in pain, too, and it's just like, I think our friend Joe Goodberry was, you know, clutching his pearls a little bit. It's just, it's
a funny... There was nothing dirty about any of those. There's not chest, but, like, there's gamesmanship, like, being kind of and I think, like, some intensity after the play.
I was talking about this with Kevin a little bit. I think there's a difference between dirty and like malicious, like being malicious. Like, you can be a little dirty in football. Like, you know, shit happens at, you know, the bottom of piles or whatever it might be. Like, you know, there's dirty, and then there's like, just,
that's more like, just like what he was doing though was just like psychological. Like, it's not, it was like, you're not just going to walk around this field. I'm going to fuck with
it's gamesmanship.
You,
he's like telling them, like, I don't care how fucking talented and high flying you fucking, I'm not going to say anything that's going to get me in trouble, but you guys that are walking around with your cigars and your shitty fashion, Joe Burrow, not to call anyone out, but I really appreciated his attitude because it was obviously going to be a losing effort, but he just wasn't having any of it. And I really liked that.
He was being a grade A jerk after the play in a non-violent way. And I like that.
And their responses to it, by the way, are 100% like vindicating him for doing that, because it's like, yeah, like you guys, you deserve to be knocked down a little bit here. Let's be honest.
100%. So that was just a hilarious cherry on top that amidst back-to-back games with the Bengals, after he was grade A trying to mess with them, and it appeared to be successfully doing so to a degree. And then they are like, oh, okay, we're going to sign him to a permanent deal, to reset the market, and then go play you in the playoffs. And it's just funny to me. Like, let's say Lamar Jackson doesn't play. The Ravens are just going to try and bloody them, I feel like.
Put Roquan at quarterback.
It's almost the worst case, best case for the Bengals, where you're like, okay, we're going to win this game. If Lamar Jackson doesn't play, they're going to win in all likelihood. And you're just going to get a divisional opponent that doesn't care and is just going to punch you in the mouth over and over and over. They already showed you they're going to punch you in the mouth, benching starters and with a third-string quarterback. Now it's the playoffs, and if they don't have their quarterback again, there's nothing else for them to do other than try and make this a shitty postseason for you. So
it's like, yeah, have fun going to Kansas City. I'll give you a nice thigh contusion.
I'll give you a nice Charlie horse.
Bend one of your fingers. Yeah, like
enjoy the trainer's room over the next week. They're gonna hit. So I don't know. The Bengals also like Jackson Carmen after the play. He was the things that were happening during the end of plays were all the Bengals for the most part, and then after the play, the Ravens were just like being jerks.
This is a fan base that defended, and I remember this vividly, that defended Vontaze Burfict.
They loved it. They relished in it.
It's just ridiculous.
They relished in it.
It's ridiculous.
Like, I hated Joey Porter. I hated Troy Polamalu. Those guys to me were dirty players, but like Najee Harris is a hitter and is a clean player, and I like watching him, and I thought it was, you know, I'm a big Najee guy, whatever. It was cool to see him catch that touchdown, be a little bit sassy after, but like he's a clean player. The Bengals crying about it is just so ironic and all of those little babyisms. So I thoroughly enjoy the idea. I take solace, I suppose, if Lamar Jackson doesn't play, knowing that the Ravens are just going to try and beat the living shit out of the Bengals as best as they can. So that is a fun alternative reality of what this game could have been if Lamar doesn't end up practicing. So feel free to join me in that experience, which I'll be there for. I'm going to Cincy on Sunday.
Oh, wow. Breaking news.
Yeah. I got my ticket, got my hotel, got it all ready to go.
Okay. Well, that's that's going to be quite an experience. I fucking hope to God for your sake that he does play.
I don't even care at this point. It's already all booked. And if he doesn't play, he doesn't play. If he doesn't play, he can't play. And I've seen a lot of clips. A lot of players are like coming to his defense right now, and they're being like, hey, I sprained my PCL, I couldn't play. Like,
right. No, I get it. I just hope that he does. And will you be in dereliction of your recording duties should I find somebody else?
I should be good. If you want, I mean, I'm not going to be immediate. I'll be at the stadium, I imagine, through the end of the game, but I don't think, especially if he doesn't play, I'm anticipating them losing, and we'll get to it.
You'll get out of there early. I'm gonna hold Cole to this one. He's gonna be up late. I know he's gonna be. I know Quinn is gonna be asleep. So Cole, it's time.
Quinn, if she really exists.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
This hypothetical baby.
Yeah. We'll preview that game. We'll figure all that out when it is time. Nice little.
We still got time. It's early. It feels late in the week. Feels like Thursday.
I was thinking that today. I was like, dude, it feels like Friday right now. Like this is great. But you know,
it is post holidays. Just football, playoff football, national championship last night. Amazing to watch.
There's really just no bad time on the calendar, is there? It's just life is great.
Ain't life grand.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is all we got for tonight. A little impromptu session to talk Roquan Smith and all the related topics with it. We'll have more on that aforementioned game. Hopefully, we'll have some clarity on Lamar Jackson's status come the next time we record. I don't even know when we're going to record because it came out that it's going to be the Sunday night game. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do a little Saturday. Let's get weird situation. Maybe not. We'll see what happens. But thank you guys for listening to this one. We'll talk to you for that one. And in the meantime, have yourselves a great week.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?